Here it is. Check, one, two. All right. Good morning. Late morning, everybody. You're listening to part two of the Winners and Losers radio program on www.enlightenedradio.org. And we're usually broadcasting 24/7, mostly, on player.enlightenedradio.org. And today it's my honor and special privilege to have Gene Bruskin, a long timer in the peace and labor movement like me. And anyway, I'm pleased to have him on. He's a playwright and a poet, and he's come together with a production called The Return of John Brown. And Gene, before further introduction, should I open up with this little tune that intros the program, the play?
Let me give a 30-second introduction.
Go do the 30-second intro, and then we'll get to it.
This is a play that imagines that John Brown suddenly reappears where they hanged him in Virginia, put him in court, and threaten to hang him again, and then he sings this song in the courtroom when they threaten to hang him again.
Okay, here we go.
Let me give you some advice. I will make it real concise. Since you say I'll pay the ultimate price, you can put a man on trial, make him walk that extra mile, but you can't hang the same man twice. It ain't nice, but you can't hang the same man twice. Don't you know you can't hang a man so? They tried it once and here I am, unhurt. Admit it, just quit it. God firmly will forbid it. The blood of the slave is on his skirt. But you may well be of a decent sort. You may love your family and friends. Wrong all along, the time's come and gone. This nation must now make amends. Let me give you some advice. I will make it real concise. You say I'll pay the ultimate price. You can put a man on trial, make him walk that extra mile, but you can't hang the same man twice. It ain't nice, but you can't hang the same man twice. And I joyfully on behalf a million that have no rights you were bound to respect. Don't fight it, just write it. It's time to decide it. I'm back to say there's more than I expect. Now I may be a ghost or a vision, or I may be your worst nightmare. Don't abuse or refuse, or you I will accuse. I'll be sitting right up in the chair. Let me give you some advice. I will make it real concise. You say I'll pay the ultimate price. You can put a man on trial, make him walk that extra mile, but you can't hang the same man twice. It ain't right. You can't hang the same man twice. You can't hang the same man twice.
Well, does that remain to be seen, Gene?
Well, I guess we'll have to come see the play to find out what happens to poor John.
So the return of John Brown, I suspect, given his revolutionary impulses, that they probably would kill him again. it's hard to be a revolutionary and survive the ordeal. Is that one of the points, or is it just that how it comes that John Brown and what he represented would come again?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. What happens in the show is it basically opens in 1859 with the hanging. and then it moves into the present. And in the present, you see John Brown crawling out of his grave. You don't really ever understand how he got there, but the local sheriff and a local white farmer decide that they should arrest him. He might stir up the Black Lives Matter crowd. And they put him in jail, and they pressure a judge to take the case. Meanwhile, the great-great-grandchildren of Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass, who are now attorneys in the John Brown Association, hear about it. They come down to defend them. So they're his lawyers, and they go into court. He gets in an argument with the judge, and the judge threatens him. And the courtroom becomes a musical argument about what is the real history. And there's, because the sheriff's side says, well, this all was over after slavery. You know, John Brown has nothing to do here. You know, we fixed that. And they give their history in what sort of a spoken word rap. And the lawyers give what I would consider an accurate history and how the problem still exists today. Mm-hmm. So that's the argument. And then there's a whole plot twist where John Brown intervenes with black and white farmers that end up trying to help him escape.
It sounds like that old Bob Dylan song, The Drifter's Escape.
Yeah, right.
A little bit. Not a drifter, so, but John Brown.
So the idea, I'm sorry, excuse me, John.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
So the idea is that of the show is that using music and drama, and there's a lot of humor in it, to sort of teach some history, which I found in the process that many people have never heard of John Brown, or if they have, they don't really know much about him.
Right.
So to revive him and to sort of have the story turn really about the issues today and the issues of racism that we currently face and the importance of unity and how John Brown weighs in with these black and white farmers who won't talk to each other, even though the pipeline company owned by, it's called Smoke and Mirrors, owned by Louis King, known as King Louis in the play, is trying to take both of their land, and they won't talk to each other because the white guy doesn't talk to black farmers. So this sort of becomes John Brown's current reality and his fight. And he from his cell, he brings the parties together.
Wow. You know, the first time I ever was introduced to the John Brown in a serious way was from a guy named Tommy... What was his last name? He was from, trying to remember his last name now. He was a district organizer for the Communist Party in Michigan. Mm. And he was a African-American. He'd been an auto worker, but he was a very he was a lot smarter than people thought he was, let's put it that way. Anyway, he said, I was young and full of vinegar and, you know, just out of SDS and all this other stuff at the time. And I remember he said, what do you know about racism? He asked me one time, you know, and as I, you know, and beyond having been drawn into unbelievable admiration of Dr. King, I really couldn't say too much more because I was raised in a segregated neighborhood where the only African American people were servants, or people that appeared at the door in a uniform. And he says, well, I want you to read this book. And he gave me a copy of John Brown by W.E.B. Du Bois.
Uh-huh.
And which consisted in large part of letters that Frederick Douglass had written about John Brown, and exchanged with him at times as well. And it was an interesting book because it was if you're an African American and you want to talk to a white kid about maybe how you should think about this and behave as well, you know, maybe you should see why Frederick Douglass listened to John Brown and decided that he was right, that it would take warfare to extinguish and overtake slavery. And but that wasn't the main thing that Douglass had said about him. He said he was the only white man that ever invited him to dinner and treated him like part of his family.
Yeah, and ultimately, after John Brown, as people may or may not know, this was 1859, and after years of being an abolitionist, including stopping Kansas from becoming a slave state, Brown planned this raid on the Harper's Ferry arsenal that he had hoped would be able to, his group of black and white folks would be able to liberate all these rifles and help black people free themselves in the South. And it didn't work, you know, for a whole variety of reasons. And he consulted Frederick Douglass beforehand, and Harriet Tubman helped out. But in the end, Frederick Douglass said afterwards, if John Brown did not end the war that ended slavery, he did begin the war that ended slavery. You know, I think that there are the history analysis has often been that he was just a crazed white radical extremist. You know, the history that I'm going by and that Du Bois and other scholars I respect said is that, you know, basically, as a white guy working with other black people to help free 4 million enslaved people, that shocked the South so much that it all of a sudden the nation woke up. It created a panic. It made the South be even more extreme. And when Lincoln got elected, he was actually trying to preserve the Union, not end slavery, but the fear of losing anything in the South among the slave owners ended up being resulting in the withdrawal from the Union. And that's when the Civil War started. So it's all connected. And we've got some of that stuff. We have a website, the returnofjohnbrown.com. And on that website, you can get tickets and you can read more about Brown. And mostly, if you go to the website, you'll see that on May 4th, that's a Saturday, and May 5th, which is a Sunday, you can go to the site of the cabin in Sharpsburg on Chestnut Grove Road, where John Brown actually staged the raid. It's a few miles down the road from Harper's Ferry itself. There's going to be a tour, but the whole feature of the day will be a staged musical reading on the grounds with the cabin he stayed in the background of our musical, The Return of John Brown. And so it's a great opportunity. Tickets can be gotten at thereturnofjohnbrown.com. You can register there. The tickets are free. We're asking for a donation, but that's optional. And so in addition to the musical, there will be an open house that day, and the site has been closed for a while, certainly during the pandemic, and now it's going to be open, and it's a great chance to come to Harper's Ferry, come over, see the play, see the open house, and have a wonderful day in the beginning of May.
It's a wonderful event, and if it happens on a day like today, it's going to be perfect because the weather's great here today. Yesterday it wasn't, a little less so, but hopefully another couple of weeks and you should be in pretty good shape. Unfortunately, I probably won't be able to do it because my wife and I are going to be in Spain. So during that day.
Well, we're going to film it, so
that'll be great. That'll be great. And I certainly think it's worth, always worth promoting the the traditions here, doing everything we can. It's a, you know, West Virginia's politics are in a crisis, basically.
Yeah.
Which it's not going to be easy to get
extracted. Part of the reason that I wrote this is, although it's a musical and there's some comedy and history in there, the idea of this show is to show, is that using the vehicle of John Brown in the present to sort of challenge how racism hurts all of us, including white people. And you see that the protagonist in the play who brought the sheriff in to arrest John Brown is a white farmer. And he's going to lose his land to this pipeline guy, King Louis. And he won't talk to the black farmers who are up against the same thing because he said, we don't talk to them. And so this is where Brown comes in to try to explain that you can't let that whiteness identity obstruct your real interests. Here, you know, you guys have the same interest. And so that's where that struggle comes in. So it's a way for people from in the audience without anybody sort of attacking them personally, watch this sort of flow and then be a part of the discussion after the show. And I think it's good for college students and high school students and, you know, any folks who want to be entertained and have something thoughtful going on.
I was wondering that if you had ever given any thought to sort of amending the classic John Brown's Body Lies a Moldering in the Grave, because you could have had a little resurrection verse or something in there. That
Well, that's the final song, John.
Oh, God, God. I don't want to give it away then.
The lyrics tweaked a little bit, you know, and this funny idea of the return of John Brown, we're going to be on these grounds. And, like, he may make a special appearance at one of our shows there, you know.
Well, that would be wonderful. That would be wonderful with that long, flowing beard, man. Wow. You know, and those, I always paint him with those wild eyes, you know, like he just saw, you know, a Tyrannosaurus coming around the bend or something. Was shouting a warning.
Exactly.
Well, it's wonderful, and I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to publicizing it, and I hope you get a crowd, and hope a lot more people start thinking about the sacrifice that John Brown made and the fight that he made, and understanding it better. You know, we talk about democracy a lot, and. You know, we're now engaged in a national election campaign that's, at least on the Democrat side, there's casting as a vote for democracy or preventing the overthrow of democracy. You know, you can view it defensively or offensively, I suppose. But, you know, the real fight for democracy took place before the constitutional amendment and the legislative victory. And I think that's possible. I mean, the actions of people, for example, more than half a million people went on strike this past year over the impact of inflation and everything and all this shit from the pandemic on life, on the job, and wages, right? And, you know, that was a profoundly democratic struggle. You know, the demonstrations of the Black Lives Matter movement just from a year or two ago. And plus, you know, the stuff that's happening now over the outrage in Gaza, right? These are, I mean, what democracy is there without these issues being resolved, right? I mean, and I always think to a certain extent that Trump's, you know, campaign, and it follows the pattern of a lot of fascist-like things, right? Where you take the grievances that people have that democracy, quote-unquote, just as a hey, we have contested elections thing, hasn't been fixing. Has not been fixing.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so partly the you know, what I think the play speaks to that whole issue of democracy, because from the founding constitution of all men are created equal and so on, there's been this fatal flaw in American democracy that the Civil War was an attempt to, ultimately, among other things, an attempt to correct it. Because you had white workers in the North, and then you had enslaved people in the South who were really workers. They were producing value at a huge amount to the slave owners, but there was no connection between the workers in the South and the North. And that division was hurt everybody. And now here we are today, where Donald Trump is saying that immigrants aren't even human, and the Republicans are trying to smash even a company that wants to have a diverse workforce and was advertised that they're looking for, especially for some diverse parts of their operation. Even that is on the challenge in the court, because the unity of all the different progressive people of color, immigrants, women, all that is what has kept democracy on the road. And that's exactly what they want to tear apart. Yeah, so this play focuses on the way race is commonly used to like weaken the entire working class.
I think, well, that is, it's a good thing to put that stuff in the front row of the struggle now. I remember just maybe we're about, I think we're pretty good at 30 minutes. I wanted to mention that we just went through a whole bunch of interviews in the COPE committee, you know, in West Virginia over local candidates, mainly statewide races. We don't get into the presidential, whatever it is thing, but we got to all the state, and we had a lot of young people that are running for office and that are becoming active, okay? Even a couple of young Republicans that I listened to their pitch to us, and I said, you know, man, I don't think your party is going to give you much money for saying that. But whatever. Anyway, and still, I was inspired by the number of young people that are getting out there. On the other hand, they need to hear the message of John Brown, I mean, among others. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, we all tried to be fair. Each of us on the COPE committee thing took one question, and we asked every candidate the same question. And the one I asked was, I just quoted Liz Shuler over the consequences of the strike year last year and what the major issues were: wages, lost wages, benefits, and pressure on the job, staffing.
Right.
I waited for any one of them to put any one of those issues on the top of their list.
Right.
When they did their rap. And even the best of them didn't quite get there. They didn't quite get it, okay? Why did 500,000 people walk out on the street? Okay, that's a sacrifice. Nobody does that for fun. Nobody. Right. I practically got thrown out of Vermont for starting too many strikes. But, I never saw people engage in that, you know, to attack the company, for example. They were always defending themselves. You couldn't get a strike vote over 50% just to attack the company because they did something evil. You couldn't, you know, not really. Not when people's lives and families are at stake, no. But to defend themselves, yes, yes. And when they do that, you have to understand that if they don't stick together, if they don't overcome, you know, biases and intuitions and presidents of a lifetime, they lose. They just plain lose.
Yeah, I think that's really important, John, and that really there's been an unprecedented wave since my time in the labor movement of 40 plus years of all this sort of new bottom up organizing. I think that to his credit, President Biden has supported that. He's a very favorable people in the National Labor Relations Board. He's walked on picket lines. He has encouraged new plants to be union. Despite that, you know, many of us, including myself, are very critical of what he's doing in Gaza. And I think that we should be. But in the end, we can wage this fight against Joe Biden in the future in terms of the policies that we want to push him further on to the right direction. If Donald Trump gets elected, there will not be any room to wage these fights. In fact, he's talking about dismantling the National Labor Relations Board.
Of course.
Which, as weak as it is the only place the federal government sort of defends our right to organize. And his interests are entirely corporate, despite his rhetoric that, you know, I'm on your
Absolutely.
Side. He's really not. So we have to sort of fight Biden and push him in the right direction now and in the future. But we can't be fooled by the fact that don't vote for Joe Biden because of the Genocide Joe or something, because then you'll get somebody Donald Trump, and you won't have any room on your issue.
I agree with you. However, I think that Biden is an essential part of rolling back this particular threat. Okay, but it's got to be bigger than Biden, because I'm not entirely sure that Biden's compromised. I mean, this international thing, and also I want to say that some of the aspects of the trade wars are contributing to the inflation or keeping it from going down faster. And that also is my problem is that even if he wins, okay, and certainly if he doesn't win, you have a titanic struggle ahead of you, because the system is not functioning well. And the divisions are so sharp that, you know, you run the risk of any externality basically just causing it to paralyze or semi-paralyze, right? And so I think that's a situation in which the people need to learn, we all need to learn, that ultimately we are our own protection. That, you know, that you may have to take to the streets in the millions. You may have to organize something that looks like a general strike someplace. You may have to organize in political ways that, you know, look, it's not just defense. You have to do something. Otherwise, the whole public services are going to fail. Let me just give you an example here, because it's a perfect example of this little crisis. Jefferson County, West Virginia, actually has no government now. And the reason is that two Trumpers got onto the thing, plus a completely opportunist couple of Republicans. So four out of the five county commissioners are basically corrupt, okay, in my view. Anyway, and two of them caused such disruption, the Trumpers. One of them hooked up with the Oath Keepers, apparently. And, you know, that they boycotted the meetings, and the government has ceased to function. You go sit in the meeting and they can't get through the minutes, they can't approve anything, they can't do anything. And now the prosecuting attorney has issued charges issued by one side against the other, and it's in the courts now about ordering the commissioners to not boycott but attend a meeting. Now, that level of dysfunction, right? I'm sorry, John Brown is gonna, are people, a lot of John Browns I think are going to have to come to the rescue. I just
I mean, the Republicans, and this in a way goes back to the Civil War. The Republicans consider government the enemy because the purpose of the federal government is to sort of oversee the country as a whole and make sure that that democracy is sort of defended. And from the Republican point of view, that means that programs where the government has, whether it's food stamps or daycare or whatever it is, they consider that interference, you know? And so they're really against government, because without government, then people with corporate folks can do anything that they want, you know? And so that fight that you're talking about has to happen, you're right, at the presidential level. It has to happen at all the down ballot races. It has to happen at the state house and the state and Senate and federal government. It has to happen on the job, because all these issues are this, even if we were to win and hopefully Biden wins, these issues aren't going to go away.
No, they're not.
We need each other. And we need the John Browns and the Joni Browns of today to like
yes, the John and Joni
come
Browns,
forward
yes.
with righteous indignation. Maybe not with the rifle, but certainly with the righteous indignation that John Brown led his life with.
Well, as Warren Zevon said, "Hey, Dad, send lawyers, guns, and money." Anyway,
so
all right,
John, let me just say one more
ahead.
Time.
It's why don't you, May 4th why don't you, and 5th. Close us out, actually. Take us out.
May 4th and 5th in the afternoon in Sharpsville on Chestnut Grove Road. But you go to the returnofjohnbrown.com. You'll get all the detail. You can get free tickets. You come to this historic site and actually be some of the first people that toured around there for a number of years and see the go into the cabin itself and see the players who were part of the raid. There are wax figures in there. It's quite quite exciting, and it's a beautiful way to spend the day. So RSVP your tickets now so we know you're coming, let's go out and have some fun and maybe get a little bit inspired together.
All right, pal. Thank you so much. You've been listening to the Winners and Losers radio program. Our special guest, Gene Bruskin, the author, I believe, and playwright and poet for Return of John Brown. Mm-hmm. And look for our podcast on podcast.enlightenradio.org. And also you can look at the Enlightened Radio page on Facebook. It's actually called Enlightened Radio from Shepherdstown, West Virginia, even though it's mostly from Harpers Ferry now. But and also you can look for it on the Facebook page, Labor Beat Radio, which is co-sponsored with John Christian Center, our local Labor Council president. And anyway, so I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much, Gene, for coming on. And it's late, but everything comes next.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Record.